Overview: South America in Transition. This week we'll leave Europe behind to focus on freedom, or the lack thereof, in the New World. Slavery in the United States was on the retreat in the North, where free laborers could do more work more cheaply than slave labor could. In the American South, by contrast, slavery was growing stronger. Slavery was driving America into a vicious circle of regionalism. Differences in geography led to economic differences that produced differing cultures that differed ever and ever more on the issue of slavery. In South America, Simón Bolívar was fighting for freedom from Europe. He pushed the Spanish out of his homeland of Venezuela and what is now Colombia. He had a vision of a peaceful, prosperous, free, and unified continent, a United States of South America that he named Gran Colombia. It started off well enough, but students will see how it all worked out next week. Let's start with Bolívar. Last week, we looked at Simón Bolívar's youth and first battles. We stopped with the fall of the Second Venezuelan Republic in 1813. Bolívar retreated to New Granada, now Colombia. In 1815, as Europe began to return to normal after the Napoleonic era, Bolívar fled to the island of Haiti, where slaves had successfully revolted against Napoleon in 1803 to establish their own republic. It was during this time of exile to the islands that Bolívar wrote a letter that revealed his understanding of the weaknesses of his own people. In his Letter from Jamaica, Bolívar assessed why South Americans found it so hard to take up the task of self-government. He blamed Europe for the sad condition of his people, saying the Spaniards had oppressed the natives, never allowing them any training in self-government and merely using the colonies for their own profit. Bolívar did not just blame the state of affairs on Europe, however. He believed that a popular form of government would not serve his people and would probably lead to their ruin. He believed the fight for freedom from Spanish rule would not be able to produce true freedom for his people in his generation. Haiti promised to help Bolívar liberate his own land if he would promise to abolish slavery, a promise he was glad to both make and keep. In 1817, he landed in Venezuela and began fighting Spain. In 1819, Bolívar delivered New Granada, what is now Colombia, from Spanish rule. Bolívar had trouble, though, in gaining popular support for the independence movement, mainly because he was Spanish. It was only after he convinced a young herdsman named Páez to join him that he managed to rally more support. Páez was a born leader with strong, charismatic personality. Páez successfully led several military operations. The Battle of Carabobo on June 24, 1821, secured the independence of Venezuela, and Bolívar began to assemble his great dream of a unified South American country. Bolívar named the new country Gran Colombia and became its first president. It initially covered the area of modern-day Panama, Colombia, Venezuela, and Ecuador. Administratively, the country was split into three departments, or provinces. His dream was to liberate and then unite all of South America into one nation. He thought that as more South American countries were liberated, they would join Gran Colombia as additional departments. The people he fought for may not have valued freedom much, but Bolívar did. Every time Bolívar shook off European rule in another territory, he abolished slavery there. The opposite pattern prevailed in the young United States. The average white American valued freedom highly enough to fight for it, but slavery expanded after the break with Britain. That's not what America's founders wanted or expected. When the Constitution was written, many educated Americans thought slavery would wither away in time, whether they supported the practice or opposed it. Slavery seemed necessary at first when there weren't enough willing workers to do all the jobs of the new nation, but paid workers tended to be more efficient than slaves at most tasks. As immigrants flooded into the country, the need for slaves diminished. The changing face of agriculture changed the demand for slaves. In the Chesapeake region, farmers were switching from tobacco to less labor-intensive crops like corn and wheat. Owners in Maryland and Delaware began freeing their slaves. Masters in Virginia held on to more of their slaves because it was expensive to free them. There were mandatory legal fees. Thomas Jefferson repeatedly expressed a desire to free all his slaves, but he never did so in his lifetime. In addition, there was a fear of freedom. Where would all the freed slaves go? How would they survive? Would they retaliate against their former masters? Many owners feared the social consequences of wide-scale manumission. Further south, in South Carolina and the Georgia plantations, owners made a massive commitment to slavery. Many people expected Congress to outlaw the importation of slaves in 1808, as soon as the Constitution permitted. So they imported 250,000 African slaves between 1788 and 1808. As a result, slaves made up 80% of the population of the coastal counties of these states. Slavery was reasonably profitable in Georgia and South Carolina, where many slaves operated on the task system. Slaves were given specific jobs, and when they had completed these, they were at leisure. Many of the slaves then worked hard on their own private plots of land and maintained a brisk commercial economy. Way down in the Deep South, however, the task system began to disappear. Land in the Cotton Belt of Alabama and Mississippi was too valuable to give slaves their own plots. The work in the cotton fields was too hot and too hard to let slaves get ideas or develop independent habits. Slave owners took pains to keep their slaves completely dependent on them, dependent for food, clothing, work allowances, and so on. The South's dependence on slavery and the cotton trade kept them rural and dependent on European markets, so the North took the lead in industrialization. The fundamental value systems of the regions began to diverge. The North prized work and profit. The South valued leisure and a culture reminiscent of the medieval aristocracy. Southern leaders measured their prestige in slaves, and because plantations paid handsomely, owners tend to invest in more land and more slaves and in luxury goods from Europe, rather than diversifying by developing regional industries or transportation infrastructure. Southern cities, in contrast to the North's self-sustaining, growing commercial and industrial centers, were glorified transportation depots for plantation exports. The South was stuck on the plantation while the North rode the wave of industrialization into the future. Many American slaves embraced Christianity. During the First Great Awakening in the 1730s, evangelists like George Whitefield had gladly proclaimed the gospel to slaves. The Second Great Awakening of the early 1800s brought many slaves to Christ. The biblical message that resonated most with the slaves was different from that which spoke to their masters. Slaves found it easy to identify with the Israelites. Like the slaves in Egypt, they were a suffering people, far from home. The Israelites had waited for a Messiah and vindication from God as he visited divine punishment on their oppressors. The theology of the white masters, by contrast, taught that God had cursed Canaan in the book of Genesis. The original sin of Adam brought punishment on the whole human race. The sin of Ham subjected all of his descendants to slavery. The slaves balked at this. They refused to believe their slavery was a punishment for someone else's sin, no matter how often their masters said so. Thus, even though white Christians and black Christians read the same Bible and claimed the same creeds, divisions crept in at the deepest level. Many masters doubted whether slaves could really be humans. Many slaves doubted whether masters could really be Christians. What happened 200 years ago left its mark on history and on the present. Much of the South America that Bolivar fought to liberate from Spain has yet to master the challenge of self-government. And, sadly, most Christians in America still gather in all-white or all-black churches to this day.